Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I'm Rob Calder, joined this week by our two foreign travellers. First up, Zoe Carr, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Is that the first non-Simpsons drop we've had for the year?
Potentially. To be fair, now you have been here for the last 2 weeks. We just haven't done this pod that we were planning on doing. Dave Peters, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both back in the country. You've obviously both had a little bit of travel to get through over the last little bit, which we'll be discussing on today's show. So this is going to be a lot of what's been happening for probably the last month. It's been a fairly busy little period, I think, for everyone in this sort of space. So we'll just unpack a little bit of what the international travels look like for both of you, and more importantly, where it would apply to our coaches, I think, moving forward, and what that will look like for our junior players coming through, but also our junior coaches. Any changes to the program that might be coming up? We're obviously coming up to the end of block four, I think it is, for you guys now. So there might be a little bit of a reset coming just in terms of what's block one look like moving forward, and would any of these changes sort of come into it? So there'll be a little bit to unpack here, of course, as we go through it. I asked and you delivered some coach shout outs to get through to begin with.
It's the coach shout out. It's the coach shout out.
The coach shout out. The coach shout out. The coach shout out.
All right, we're fading that down early on that one. I still hate that music vehemently. But big thanks to Tobin Cuss on this one, who sent through some coach shout-outs that he's been working with. Obviously, to start off with, PJ Segerton, who is currently coaching at the Outlaws. That's going to be tough to say four times fast. And soon to be part of the Dandenong Rangers program, always looking to level up and learn from others and give time to come shadow other Rangers coaches at games and trainings to prepare for next season. Very inquisitive and open to deep basketball conversations, which is fantastic. The next two come from the Community Coach Mentoring Program, which Tobin is a part of. So he's got a couple of coaches that he helps mentor as part of that. So Josh Mackey is currently the head coach of the under-12 Devonport Warriors down in your old hood. Zoe, you Devonport?
I was not Devonport. I was, I lived in Somerset and played for Smithton Saints.
Right.
But our home venue was in Devonport and had a House of Spuds just across the road. Absolute winner.
Okay. Not
anyone from from Tasmania will absolutely understand what I'm talking about.
Excellent. So he's busy working with multiple coaches and teams and working hard on instilling team spirit into his teams. Josh has also been putting time in behind the scenes working on a player development profile system to help share strengths and areas of improvements with families. So Josh has been very self-reflective and keen on identifying new ways to collaborate with his assistant coaches more. The next one is Jai Burton, who is currently coaching the under-12-1 boys at Eltham, as well as helping out a bit with some of the under-16 girls and keen to improve in all he does. Currently working on helping his team get around each other to ensure team spirit and camaraderie is high, helping the boys manage their emotions. Jai is also helping parents learn development and winning are not always going to work at the same time. Oh, preach.
Yeah. Like it's high five, Jai.
Yeah, exactly right. That's very much the world I think we all live in at various stages. If you do have any coach shout-outs, you are more than welcome to send them through to coaching@basketballvictoria.com.au and we'll pick them up from there. So with a Women's World Cup 2 weeks away, I think it is off the top of my head now, before the Opals play in game one, you've both been on international trips very recently that we're going to sort of unpack a little bit and just sort of see what we can learn from the international game styles, I suppose. So, Zoe, we'll start off with you. So you are coming off an under-17 Women's World Cup in the Czech Republic where you grabbed a bronze medal over there. So, one, congratulations. Two, take us through the experience.
Oh, well, of just the tournament or the whole
Go the whole thing. Go the whole thing.
Okay. We were lucky enough to have two selection camps. One in March and one in May, and were able to – in the camp in May actually was outstanding because that's one where we had to actually pick the team. But we got to play China twice in a couple of games, which really helped show us what we needed to see to be able to make selections. And then obviously headed over there, we got there a little bit earlier and played a couple of friendlies because obviously it's pretty difficult given where we are in the world logistically to get practice games. And, you know, like you see a lot of the time we're heading to World Cups in every age group, we're heading to World Cups and the teams we're playing against have played, you know, 10 or 12 practice games together of quality. As quality practice games, and So we just squeeze in what we can, a bit of practice and two friendlies, so one against Spain and one against China over there as well, who were like all – well, both of them were projected to be, you know, in that – in the hunt for the top four. So both great games. And then the tournament started and it was almost like once it started, it finished. It was just so quick. You're working sort of day and night. If you're not thinking about your next game or thinking about your next scout that you have to put together, you're thinking about the group and review and how things that we may need to change, some athletes we need to check in on and all of that. But we're really lucky to have just such an awesome staff. That and experienced stuff, so we're able to sort of navigate all of that as I suppose smoothly as possible. There's always, you know, ups and downs and things like that, but it was relatively smooth sailing for us, which was great. And the girls were fantastic. The girls were just unbelievable in terms of their professionalism. You know, sometimes World Cups in particular can get a little bit boring because you know, you train or you play your game and then the coaches or the medical support staff are like, right, off your feet. And they're just like, well, what do we do now? Like it's a bit, you know, it can get a bit tiresome from that perspective. Not a single complaint from any of them, just understood the assignment.
Might be generational. Like, off your feet usually means time on your phone.
Yeah, well, which maybe.
I don't know that too many teenagers are going to argue against.
But they really enjoyed each other as well, which was great. You know, there's sometimes I've been on tours where you're having to manage some relationships between athletes because they just don't get along and that can be difficult. But this team just really enjoyed each other and it showed.
Yep, interesting. So when you – obviously you get to a World Cup, you get to play against different play styles from around the world. So you're getting like African countries, European countries, Asian countries and all those sorts of things. Was there any variety of play style that you saw that caused you problems?
I suppose Japan.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Why Japan? What was it about them?
Speed. Their ability to just shoot the ball without warning. Their ability to get downhill so fast but be so good at shooting the three, it's really hard to take that away and control penetration at the same time. They also did a thing, I don't know if anybody watched, if you did watch it or you have the ability to watch it again, they did like a little Gortat action even in transition. So the big would run. The guards who are just lightning quick in transition. So if you didn't pick them up early, it was almost good night. But they'd set a back screen at about the 3-point line, and then the big that had rim run would screen in their play, so the help defender, and knowing that their point guards or their guards are able to break down and break down their defender, and basically just eliminated any help. It was like, it was cool to watch. It was frustrating, but it was a cool little, I guess, adjustment, to the fact that they didn't have size. So
is that somewhat empowering to a degree? Like they're not trying to make shift.
They're just playing someone, to who they are.
Yeah. Like yeah. That probably helps you a little bit. Yep. I think we can be guilty, I suppose, of trying to send traditional teams. Like you need point guards, you need mm-hmm. posts, you need things that line up. Whereas a lot of the Japanese and the Asian countries in particular don't have a lot of size. So they just go with like these buzzsaw.
Yeah.
Effectively, everyone can put it on the floor. Everyone can shoot it. Everyone can do a little bit of everything. And it's almost empowering.
Well, and it's when we talk the other side of the ball, they've got such a low center of gravity that they're almost always in stance, even when they walk. Like it's, and so they are climbing in. It's a pressure. And a chaotic pressure that we're not used to. You know, when we played Spain and whilst we lost that game, it was still a more a traditional gameplay, game style that we're used to. Whereas this was just, this was like, we got to the end of it and the three of us as coaches looked at each other and were like, I'm exhausted. it was quick. And so obviously the aim of the game was to try and slow it down as much as we could and try and get them in the half court to then be able to utilize our length and our size advantage that we had, because we had a massive, like in every position, we had a size advantage. So thankfully we managed to get through that one. But yeah, that was a really difficult matchup for us.
So, I mean, would that be similar to what you saw earlier in the year, DP, when you were in Japan?
Yeah, same thing. The pace was just, like, unbelievable. Took our guys a couple of games to get used to. The ball pressure they were able to apply in every position was really difficult for us. Like, it challenged us to really secure the ball, play in a low stance, play off 2 feet, make your passes with 2 hands. That was a challenge. And then... as Zoe said, just the fearlessness of shooting the three at any point over half court was difficult for our guys to understand.
Yep.
When they take a step over the half court line, you need to almost start carrying a hand.
Yep.
But the challenge to that was the pace they could just get downhill at.
Yep.
Was tough to be like, oh, you're telling us to carry a hand, but they're just going head down past you now.
Yep.
And finding that balance of what was right and what was wrong and how to curb that was a challenge. Right.
And it's funny because I think you watch a game and you sit there and go, oh, this is what's happening. But it's not until you actually have to coach that game where it's like, geez, it's actually really hard to deal with when it's like, this is one of our best defenders and they're just flying past them.
Yeah.
And that's so hard. Like, what do you tell the player in that capacity as well? Because it's hard to be down in a stance to guard dribble penetration whilst carrying a hand. Like, it just physically, that is difficult to be able to do.
Well, and got to give props to the Japan head coach who did an outstanding job of every time, because it got to a point where we could only switch. That was the only thing we could do to make sure we had constant coverage. But he did an outstanding job of then working his offense to find the least productive defender and attack them. And he was great at it. And they were then obviously great at it too. So, you know, added another it's one thing to switch, but then what comes next? Like, so, you know, going into like some pre-switching stuff but then you'd pre-switch and so we'd then attack the other one. And so it was, it was a really cool chess match. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it was exhausting.
Yep. And it's an open question for both. Does that change how you would potentially look at selections moving forward? Like, would you not necessarily pick as much size? Would you go maybe a little bit more guard heavy because that is such a difficult style to play against? Like, is that something you consider, DP?
I'm not sure if it would change how we select the team, but potentially just who we put on the floor at those times. Like, I do remember watching the game and it was like, it's easy to see, hard to deal with at the time. Yeah. Like, completely understand that. But I think we always have to select who we have. Like, the best players have to be selected because we know what we're coming up against, and we know against those other teams you do need size, length. But yeah, I think just maybe trying to find out what the right rotation is during some of those games, and is it an opportunity to go small or not, would be something we'd look at.
Yep.
And with our selection, we knew that Japan was a chance for that quarter. So it did play into our selection process in terms of versatility and length. So rather than bulk size, it was how do we get the size for the Spains in the US without giving up the speed and versatility for Japan. So, yeah, it's a... I think sometimes people think that all of this stuff is just either random or, you know, we don't really care, or, you know, this sort of, there's a lot that goes into it and a lot of thought processes that go into it that, you know, that come into play of to not only who's who's selected, but who is played at a particular moment and on who. You know, we had, again, watching that game, there was an athlete for the other team who had 32 points and we were antsy about it, but with her getting 32 points, we would still win. With their point guard getting 32 points, we would lose that game. And so that's why it was a, you know, having to ride that out was probably one of the most stressful moments, I think, of coaching. But we had to dig in with it, and eventually it got us to where we needed to be with, you know, the last couple of minutes of the game, at least being able to exhale a little bit.
Well, it's funny because that game, I was out that night as well, so I didn't get to watch it. So I was trying to, like, film a coach coaching whilst looking on a separate tablet to try and find, like, live stats and scores. Going back and watching the game was a lot nicer knowing the result. Like, it's when you're in that moment of, geez, we might bomb out here in a quarterfinal, which is no one wants to be in 5-8. Like, everyone wants to be in at least a chance of a medal. But, yeah, that's stressful. But it was a fun game to watch. Like, it was a really fun sort of meshing together of two different styles. And I think that's the real test, because obviously there were a lot of Victorian kids in that team, like, it's, which is fantastic as well. It's what we always hope for from the Basketball Victoria programs. But you don't make those teams being bad at basketball. You don't even make the camp being not good enough. Like, it's like, you are genuinely dealing with the 0.0001% of the kids that are playing that sport at that point in time. You have a lot to pick from. And yes, you can go back and say, oh, would we have done this knowing what we know? Look, maybe you wouldn't change. Maybe you wouldn't change. Who knows? But it is stressful watching those games, depending on what you're coming up against. And even the Spain quarterfinal, like, absolute heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Like, genuine heartbreaker.
Two turnovers. Really, two possessions, and that was it. We'd made the tear back. We were, this happens a lot. Our worst game of the tournament came in that semi-final. Like, we couldn't hit a shot. We couldn't, like, execute. Like, things were just not working for us. We found the group to get it done. We've come back where I think we got to 1 point up. And then we turn the ball over twice, they score off of it, and it's over.
Yep.
Like, and it's, that's how, you know, when coaches talk about ball security and taking care of it, and, you know, we would have preferred a 24-second violation to what happened in those two possessions. But it happens, and you just have to sort of deal with it. And that's one thing I've got to give the kids. They were absolutely devastated after that game, because I think there was a belief that if we'd made the final, we could knock off the US after what we'd done.
Yeah, because you played them earlier in the tournament.
In the tournament.
Obviously. Yep.
However, those games are really hard to get back from, you know, where you've thrown everything at a semi-final and you've come up short. So now you're not even guaranteed some hardware to walk away. At least when you go into the final, you're like, well, we get something, you know. Yep. Whereas this, they're really hard to bounce back from. And those kids were fantastic. They were sad. There's no doubt about it. They were sad and upset, and there were a few tears. But then once we walked out of the venue, it was like, right, on to the next one. And I was really proud of them for that, because Canada were good, and they weren't just good, they also zoned heavy. Like, I think we were zoned for probably 3.5 quarters of the game.
Victorian kids would have had no problem. They see a lot of that in the VJBL.
Stop it. Which is hard.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
well, especially when you come off a game where you can't make a shot.
Yeah.
Like, it's, that plays into the mind a little bit.
So that's not a jab at the zone. Like, you know, if you're going to play the statistics, we've just shot horribly.
Yep. smart coaching.
Make us shoot the ball. Yep. Like, so the added pressure of, we were a lot of the time in the mix of that top three. Like, there was a lot of conversation. It could be one of any of Australia, Spain or the US that could win it. And now we're out of that. And so the pressure of, well, we have to win bronze, it adds to it. And they were... Yeah, I thought they showed courage beyond their years to be able to do that.
Was there maturity anything you did as a coaching staff to refocus or like just get them back into the, hey, what's next? Or was that just who they were?
Part of it was who they were.
Yep.
We had a discussion about, you know, not what had happened, but basically, we can't change anything that's just happened. But we can let it ruin what's coming next if we don't turn this around, if we don't move on. We'll always have this, and this will always be a tough swallow, but, you know, we've got more work to do. And yes, it hurts and we're disappointed, but man, how much more disappointed will we be if we finish fourth? So they took that, and we didn't really harp on that game.
Yep.
It was just like, right, well, let's just throw everything at this. And everything was about what came next. Not so much spoken about, but in everything we did. So it was, you know, vision of who we were playing. All conversation were about, like, how we are going to, you know, break down Canada, how we are going to stop them, how we are going to do this. And it was all about what was coming ahead, rather than, you know, we don't want to do what we did last night of, yeah. Yep. So, yeah, so, but the kids were fantastic. I think we potentially could have done none of that, and they may have still been in the same spot mentally. Yep. So, yeah, they were great.
Yep. So last one before we jump over to DP on this one, what were the main takeaways from that tournament that you'll look to implement into the BV programs?
Physicality is not going anywhere, and it is it was the most physical tournament I've been to. And so I think it's a case of we have to – it's hard because we don't control how our games are – like, as coaches, we don't control how games are reffed, et cetera, but we do control practice environments. And I think we've got a responsibility to continue with that. Not only the management of physicality, but also deploying some physicality themselves as well. Early, the girls struggled with being physical without fouling, because the things that they were allowed to do, they're not used to doing. And so it almost crossed a line. But by the end of the week, they'd figured it out and were quite good at it. But, yeah, sort of giving physicality is just as important, learning how to do that. Taking care of the ball in the backcourt, like things like flipping the floor are so important. If you don't have pressure release stuff in your backcourt. And now if you're coming up against, like, as you say, if you're coming up against zone every week, it's probably a difficult one to practice. So I think, again, it's, we've got to be, you know, 94 feet defenders in every level. And if we get beaten by it, that's fine. But that's how we're going to get better. One, at it. Two, managing it. We put pressure release things in at our camps, and it was lucky we did, because the defensive pressure is at another level. And that didn't matter which country. Like, obviously Japan were suffocating. But, you know, Europeans and the US, and, you know, we're coming up against some athletes and some bodies that we just don't have here. And so the pressure that comes with that is immense. So those sort of pressure release options in the backcourt is pretty important. Offensively, being able to, when I talk about the physicality, get feet in the paint and score with physicality, you know, was often, and I see it a lot on Friday nights, they get into the paint, they get a little bump, so they throw themselves on the floor to draw the foul instead of just make the layup. Like, just make the shot. And if you get the foul, great. But the finishing on the rim against that physicality was difficult. Defensively, we actually weren't too bad from a defensive perspective, but it's those particularly Asian countries of being able to stay in front and carry the hand, manage the lightning speed of them. And if it's something you can't, because they are just way too quick, like rotation rules. So we had in about and it's something we've got in with Vic Country, is like our stay-go rules. If it's stay, you go and your split line, it's stay call, you go and deny the weak side, like your player on the weak side, take away that pressure release. If it's go, obviously you're almost kamikaze in your rotation. But you've got even less time to rotate. So accountability on the ball, even if it's just slowing it down, they may still get feet in the paint, but if it takes them four or five dribbles as opposed to one, now all of a sudden your rotation becomes a little bit easier. So, yeah, it's a lot. Thankfully, though, when I look at the stuff that we're doing as a high-performance department across all four programs, it's all things we've not only spoken about, but I've seen in all our session plans and all our, I guess, our vision moving forward. So that's, to me, sitting there, I was like, you know, yeah, we're not there yet in where we need to be, but it's like we're heading in the right direction, which was really cool.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. So I'll give you a break from talking.
Thank you.
we're jumping over to the men's side now. So, DP, you've just got back from Shanghai last week, I think it was. I think you were back maybe 12 hours and then straight into state interviews.
Yep.
So brilliant timing on everyone on that end of it. But so what was the tournament you took a group to?
Yep. So Shanghai Future Stars is the name of the tournament. It's an 18 and under tournament. I believe the way it works is Basketball Australia has been invited to this tournament across the last 3 years. This is our third year. And what they've been generous enough to do is provide that opportunity to the team that wins the under 18 nationals. So Victoria obviously won the under 18 nationals this year, and the decision was made by Basketball Victoria, I guess, as a whole, to send a mixed team of country and metro athletes, and then also send a spread of different age groups. So we didn't take any top age athletes. We had bottom age, double bottom age, and I guess triple bottom age. And the plan was we're taking away athletes that we believe, with some additional exposure, could be helped in whatever their pathway is, whether it's college exposure, maybe potentially making under 20 state teams next year, or hopefully for athletes that are going to represent Australia, whether it be under 15 Oceanas or under 17 Oceanas next year, hopefully athletes that will go into that sort of space.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. A little bit of a weather issue when you first landed, it'd be fair to say.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't track it too closely. there was a typhoon, maybe around 100 to 150 kilometres away from the coast of where we were, Shanghai. Yep. It severely impacted the rain. There was lots of flash flooding where we were, lots of flight cancellations. So we were super lucky to get out when we did. Some families who were on flights not that long after us were cancelled and were cancelled for multiple days after that. So the timing worked out well for our group to get there on time. But, yeah, as I said, we were met with flash flooding, lots of rain, and that lasted for a good 4 to 5 days straight.
Yeah, and that's rough. Like when you've been sitting on a plane for a good chunk of time, obviously the last thing you want to do is now sit in a hotel room before you have to go and play a game and all those sorts of things. But talk to us about the tournament. So two pools, I believe, is that correct?
Yeah, two pools of four, seven different countries involved in the tournament, which was, really high level. Yep. China had their China national team in it, plus a Shanghai, I guess, all-star team.
Yep.
And then the rest were teams from Canada, the US, Australia, obviously. And I've gone blank on the last couple.
I've got nothing for you either on that one, but that's all right.
Italy and Spain.
There you go.
So like a really good mix of different styles of play
and
a really good mix of just the way we would scout Team A on day one was totally different to how we had to scout and play against Team B, C and D on those following few days.
Yeah, cool. So similar game style to what you saw in Japan earlier this year, or completely different just due to a different variety of teams?
Yeah, just the variety of teams just meant very different styles of play every single game. China, or we didn't play against China, but we played against the Shanghai All-Star team. There was definitely some similarities there with how some of the Japanese teams played. But the difference was Shanghai had legitimate posts. So yeah, like okay. legitimate 6'10", 6'11 posts, and their fours were good 6'7", 6'8". So they had good size, whereas the Japanese teams mainly that we played earlier in the year were probably playing with like a forward as their five and then four guards for the most part. So a little bit more traditional in that space. And China also shot the ball probably the best out of all the teams we played against outside of Italy, which was interesting just for this tournament.
Yep.
So that was probably the other similarity with the Japan trip.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So any sort of actions or play styles that you found difficult to deal with? Like were flare screens a problem? Were on-ball screens a problem? Like what were the things that you guys probably found the most difficult to deal with?
Yeah. It's an interesting tournament because there was a lot of talent at the tournament, but through talking with some of the other coaches and managers of each of the teams, everyone had pretty short-term preps going into this.
Yep. What did you guys have?
We had two training sessions and one practice game.
Yep. Makes it tough.
Yeah, it makes it tough. Like speaking to Spain and Italy, like those two teams. So Italy had six practices, but their advantage is they're not like the COE, but it's a similar sort of setup where they have an academy. They train every day in an academy-style format with a focus on skill development, not going out and winning tournaments. But at least they're all together.
Yeah, sure.
5 days a week, and they all live on campus together, and they know each other pretty well.
Yep.
And Spain has a similar sort of setup with the group that they brought out. 5 to 6 practices, but train every day together. So just knowing that probably reduced the level of strategy or tactics that maybe was employed by the majority of teams.
Yep.
Flare screens were common. I wouldn't say we were hurt by them constantly, but we had to be super aware of them, especially against that Shanghai team.
Yep.
Like just how quickly they would get into that. And if you were just clipped, that shot was up and in. And by the time we were turning around to box out, it was already through the net. And it was just, it was just, like I said earlier, like fearless in terms of if the defender makes or takes one step in the wrong direction or gets clipped even remotely, that ball's up and in.
Yep.
The other thing that, like, it's a little bit boring to hear, but Canada had a couple of really good national team players there, 6'8", 4'5".
Yep.
Just his ability to pick and pop really was making it difficult for us. They went to it a couple of times. They had some success, and then it was just like the next 8 or 9 plays was that's all they would go to.
Yep. How did you guys defend that? Did you like change throughout or was it?
Yeah. Like we were stunting off the ball to negate it, but we weren't switching. We were in a flat show on the screen and we were making sure the five had to get back to him, but they were doing a really good job just getting it out quick and 6'8", 6'9", like hard to contest.
Yeah, high release point.
Yeah. So there was a few times where we had to make the decision of the player stunting, just had to auto rotate.
Yep.
And our five had to leave and go to the next closest.
Yep.
Not easy to deal with, especially when that player is fairly competent in that mid-range / three-point shot. But that was something like throughout the week that we saw from a few teams, but Canada were by far the best at it. Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, versatile, obviously got athletes, those sorts of things as well. It's a difficult sort of spot to be in. What do you think the biggest challenge was for the players like throughout the tournament?
I think just the way that the FIBA games reffed still, which I love, the physicality that they allow is just so good for our players to play in and play through and have access to like that game style, because they just don't get it, I feel like, in Australia as much. The contacts that is allowed off the ball, the contact that is allowed in the paint is just so high. And watching our players have to battle and understand like, this is why we're telling you, you need to be low and wide at all times.
And playing off two.
And playing off two. The players would have been so sick of me saying that the whole week. But that was just such a big thing, like playing off 2 feet when you get deep in the paint, being able to pivot, just that was a big key to whatever success we had. That was a big key to it.
Yep.
And when we didn't do it, we were punished. It was automatic scores down the other end, and it was something we had to get better at through the week.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Was it something you were able to make changes with, like at training sessions? Because I'm assuming you guys trained when you were over there as well.
Yeah, we trained every day, yep. Which was definitely a benefit. Compared to Japan, we only had two practices when we were over there.
Yep.
Whereas this was, I guess, closer to a nationals style setup,
yep.
Where we had access to a court for at least an hour a day.
One of which underneath the stadium.
One was underneath the stadium. Yeah, pretty cool.
It would have been sick.
Set up. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. The stadium was unbelievable, by the way. 10,000 seat stadium.
And it's funny because I looked early on in the week, like managed to somehow find a link. I think Don might have sent it through.
Yeah.
I'm like, why is there nobody at the stadium? Then that's when I found out about the typhoon. And there's like full-on warnings, like do not leave your house or apartment. Like do not travel anywhere. Like it was dire for a while there. But the back end of the week, obviously, there was a lot more people.
Yeah. So it was the Shanghai Sharks stadium.
Yeah.
And it's used just for the Shanghai Sharks.
Like
there's no other clubs or sports or anything coming in there. It's purely just for them. And just cool to see like the way they've branded everything from the locker rooms to all the underground and just a nice stadium to play in.
Can imagine.
Well, yeah, and from a crowd perspective, like not much throughout the week based on what you just said, but we had about 3,500 to 4,000 at the semi-final, which was pretty good and bronze medal match. So that was even just like fun for the players to play in front of. Not very often they get that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome. So results-wise, where did you end up throughout the tournament? What did it look like?
Yeah, so we started off with a good win against Canada. That was our first pool game. Then we played Shanghai in that second one, and they gave us some issues with their shooting, but we were able to get over the top of them by the end of it, and then we knocked off Italy in the third pool round. So lucky enough to finish first in our pool. And what happens in these sort of international tournaments is if you finish first, you hope you don't play the US in the semi. But the US unfortunately lost to Spain by 2 in their pool round, which meant we met the US in the semi-final. Really good game. 11 lead changes, 7 ties throughout the game, like lots of back and forth. Boys were unbelievable throughout the whole game. But yeah, we were up 4 with about 2.5 minutes to go, and we did a poor job of matching up. We got one of our forwards matched up on one of their point guards, and that point guard had 8 points in the space of 90 seconds, and it just shows like how quickly a game could change when you effectively play that game pretty well for 38.5 minutes. Like all it takes is those 3 matchups on those 3 straight possessions to lose you the game. So we ended up losing to the US by 2. In that one, still had a chance to wouldn't say win it, but we had we took a reasonably good 3-point shot out of a timeout with about 5 seconds to go. That just hit the back of the rim. Unfortunately for us, it hit the back of the rim, then the top of the backboard. Uh-huh. So
it took forever.
Well, it was a violation, so no chance to offensive rebound. Yeah. And we didn't need a 3, but it was just the best shot we got at that time. So an offensive rebound and a finish would have at least got us a chance to go into overtime.
Yep.
So heartbreaking for the kids.
Yep.
Disappointing for all of us. But I guess not the same level of tournament, but similar to Zoe's group with the girls. The boys were pretty good at being disappointed for a couple of hours. They let it sink in. A few tears, unfortunately. But we're able to sort of turn it around with, okay, we're back on the court. This is what's next.
Yep.
This is what we're looking to do against Canada. We know what we're coming up against. This is how we're going to negate some of the things that they're bringing. This is what we want to attack this time. And they came in there with a real sense of purpose of we want to leave with something.
Awesome.
Play the right way in that final game, and we're lucky enough to come away with the bronze.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
great result. A couple of Victorian coaches went across with you as well. What were their roles that you had them doing throughout the week?
Yeah, so lucky enough to have Rebel Noda, who's been in the program for I want to say like
ever
longer forever. Than I've been in it. Yeah, comfortably. Forever. Like it's
I remember him telling one of the Spain coaches he's been coaching for over 40 years. So I didn't ask how old he was or anything, but he's been around a long time. So he was outstanding just from an experience standpoint, a bit of a mentorship standpoint for the group. It was just great having quiet conversations with a lot of them one-on-one. And then we had Marko Milutinović from Broadmeadows come out. In terms of roles, like both of them were really involved from a scouting perspective. Rebel's really good at just setting up some of the indie sort of scouts and just getting the stats and making sure we were focusing on the right players. And Marko would do more so the same thing from a field perspective on the team scouts. And then on the bench, they had their roles. Marko was probably more focused on the opposition, what they were doing, how they were doing it, and how that was affecting us, whereas Rebel, again, was more just, are we ticking the boxes of what we've spoke about pregame? Are we, you know, are we taking the right shots? Is the ball getting to the right people? This is what's most effective for us offensively. Let's keep doing this. So having those two beside me was really fun. And, you know, like it's a long, as you all know, like it's a long week. It's a lot of hours together as a coaching crew. So it's always really helpful when you get along. There's a few laughs. There's some good memories there. And I think everyone really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So same sort of question to Zoe. What were the takeaways that you'll look to implement into your program based on what you saw there?
Physicality is like the obvious one. Zoe mentioned that, I think, as her number one, like, that's not going to change. I think like we just need to continue to get better at the physical side of the game. When we play the US, they probably weren't the most athletic USA team that you would regularly come up against, but still like their speed, agility, ability to create shots was unfortunately well superior to us.
Yep.
The player that I spoke about that got 8 points in 90 seconds just through a mismatch is just – he didn't do anything special, but he saw the mismatch. He knew what he was going to from his little moves perspective and was able to execute. And it's just something that we probably still need to continue to get better at. It's just that skill development side of it now. When I look at it, like we've already made significant changes in our programs to continue to focus heavily on that. And I think it's, again, these tournaments are just – like really gives you confidence knowing that that's what we need to continue to get better at. I don't think we can technically produce just better athletes. Like that's just not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas we can produce better shooters. We can produce players that have more to their offensive bag. We can produce better one-on-one players if we focus more on those things. So I think physicality... the defensive side of things, the skill development side of things. And then the last thing I was going to actually say was probably just ball security. Like that was something that we probably struggled with throughout the tournament and we got better at as it went on, but that was also probably enough for us to lose that game against the US. Yep. 17 turnovers, so many of them are live ball turnovers, and those live ball turnovers turn into dunks or layups. So... some of that's probably penetrating too deep in the paint, but a lot of it is what we spoke about, playing off 2 feet, being able to pass with both hands, spacing the floor really well.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Enjoyable trip, though. And again, always nice to see where you're at and take kids out of their environment where they're comfortable, I suppose, which is a really cool thing as well. So it's all right, on to the next one, which is you, Zoe, again. You had 3 days off in between arriving home from the Czech Republic and jumping on another plane. So over to Korea.
Yes.
For the WKBL Futures League tournament.
Yes.
So talk us through this one.
So the tournament is a little bit of a preseason tournament for the Korean Women's Basketball League. So it's a senior tournament. And they don't have their national team players, but I think we were playing pretty much – women between mostly 22 and 30. And we were under 16s and some under 18s. And then so lucky to have Kelsey Griffin and Olivia Pollard join us just to help us with a little bit of experience and a bit of knowledge and a bit of calm as well. Because, again, we saw the same thing. They climbed into the ball heavy. We'd had some athletes get injured and not be able to come, and so we were able to replace them, but it probably threw our
balance of our group out. We didn't have enough ball carriers, especially when one of our guards got injured throughout the week. So that was a challenge, but it was a great challenge in that others had to experience some things that they probably wouldn't get the opportunity to do. So, so we won one game out of all of them. So we played three Korean National League teams and one Japanese.
University.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the Japanese team ended up winning the whole thing. But the kids were unbelievable. And the group was unbelievable in what they were able to put forward on the floor. Consistency was probably a bit of an issue, and again, that sort of played into the balance of our group. But they just took on everything and had a real go at it, which was great. But
I mean, for a good chunk of these kids as well, they're maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks removed from under 16 nationals.
Yeah, two and a half weeks, I think it was. Yep. From nationals, and yeah, walking straight into this. So, unbelievable experience though. Really cool to be able to, similar to DP, the venue was awesome. It was Hannah Banks venue. So all the Korean teams are basically owned by banks, Korean banks. So they're incredibly well paid and the venues are awesome.
Buses are pretty well decked out too.
Buses are great. And yeah, so we were just treated just unbelievably over there. And it was, yeah, a really good experience, really eye-opening to a lot of the kids, similar to DP as well. We took a mix of some athletes to give them an experience and some athletes that we think may be on the hunt for representing Australia maybe later this year with Oceania. So, then obviously that means then the next year is an Asia Cup. So Asia being a completely different style of play, we wanted to show some of those athletes what that is and what they can expect. So figure it out there rather than at the actual tournament when it really matters.
And it's funny because we weren't really sure what we were walking into. We found a YouTube game of what we thought was the tournament last year and I thought, oh, we'll be fine with this, not realising that was the under-14s tournament.
No, it was just the junior tournament.
The junior tournament. And
then I found the women's the one, and I won't repeat what I said, but I was worried.
Optimism went down as to what the results would potentially look like. And it was. It genuinely was a real interesting experience. Like that first game walking in there, and like for a lot of the girls, they've walked in there, seen the gym, they're like, this is bigger than anything else I've played in. Like this, it was a real eye-opening experience, even going through like the pre-game, the warm-up, all those sorts of things. It was really foreign to them. Normally they jump on court on a Friday night with 6 minutes to warm up and they have to go through like a real abridged version of layups and that's it. Whereas now they've got 40 minutes to get warmed up and get prepared for a game and what that looks like. Going through it all, obviously the play style very different to what they've seen before. And again, I mean, talking about that Asian style of basketball, Korea is a kind of hybrid, I think, between China and Japan as to what they play like, but it is, again, played at just breakneck speed. Like it is, like you will be pressured, the 94 feet. Every time you think, yeah, I've closed this out really well, you haven't. The ball will still go up. There was one time, like we were looking through it, we're about to play a team that had gone 0 of 10 from the three-point line the night before. And we're like, well, okay, maybe they're not shooters.
And like one of... something the other.
Seven, I think, yeah, it might have been the
and
other
so we're
game.
Like, oh, finally, a Korean team who might not be able to shoot the ball.
Yep.
That was silly.
Yep. They shot 54 threes against that. Like, it's an attempted 54 threes. And it's like, how?
Made 27 of them?
20-something of them. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
it was a good night. Yep.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like, it's the great irony of the whole thing was, and look, Kelsey Griffin and Liv Pollard being on that tour made such a world of difference because there were so many times that they would put out the fire that we wouldn't have to put out as coaches or anything like that. The irony being it was a very strong message of do not help off the strong side corner like because they will shoot it really well from there. And they did shoot it really well from there. The first possession of the game after we've had this massive discussion about it, we've gone through it at training, the person that helped off the strong side corner, one of the pros. And it's like, well,
we can't be. Who ran straight back down and went, I'm so sorry. I don't know what I was thinking.
Like it's, we can't be annoyed at little 15 and 16 year olds when the vets are doing it as well. But they were, unbelievable. And that's probably the point of difference, I think, between World Cup Shanghai is that we did have two veterans there that have been through this type of experience. They played internationally before. They've seen what that looks like. I cannot speak highly enough of what they brought to the group. Just having that level.
On and off court.
Yeah, phenomenal. Like genuinely incredible. Like they bought into the kid side of things as well. Like they were fun. They had some enjoyment with them and those sorts of things, especially when they went shopping and that sort of stuff. But the on-court experience and just calm they were able to facilitate while still playing at a high level was like nothing I've seen before. And it was a lot of fun being around pros at that level and just hearing how they talk, how they communicate. They're like, oh, you know what, Bendigo, we do this because they're both spirit players. And by the end of the week, all the girls were doing the same thing. And it's like, this is really cool to see them gravitate into a professional system.
Yeah, even like the doubles and triples calls. So like we were talking about, because we had significant size in some of our games, size advantage, some of the teams had to trap. And so one of the things that KG said, you know, we call out, you know, doubles or sometimes triples if three are coming, so they know. And then they were just barking it, weren't they? Like every time there was a – from the bench, they were just screaming it, and it was awesome.
Yep, and any time it was single, the expectation was that's one-on-one, go to score.
Yep.
Like that was kind of their terminology for it. And it's like, okay, this is cool. Like, let's not fight this. Let's lean into what they already know and let's try and work with the other kids around it. But it was a really cool experience. We had a great attaché, for lack of a better term, in Ji-hoon, who was phenomenal. Like one, great food in Korea. Like
yeah, they if you need to know where to eat over there, go find him.
Let Unbelievable. We'll happily hook you up on that one.
He found a place that fed us well with amazing food. There was like 20 of us.
Yep.
$126.
Wow.
Insane. That's pretty good. That's what Kira's walked out and she's like, how much do you think that would have cost? And we're like, $600, $700. She's like, $126. I think they've done it wrong. And Ji-hoon's like, no, that's how much it costs.
That's what it costs. Yeah.
Crazy.
Can recommend. But obviously treated fantastically, fantastic accommodation and all those sorts of things as well. But real eye-opening experience, I think. Like similar type of play styles, we got smacked on flare screens continually. Like, and I think part of that is we just don't see them here. Like they just not run a lot. And it's two-part. I don't know that we have enough shooters that can hit consistently to warrant running flare screens for it. But two, our communication is just nowhere near the level it needs to be at, I think, to play at that type of a level. Like the off-ball screening in particular, we struggled with that. And I think that's a bit of a reflection of what our junior system looks like, which is very ball-dominant guards, drive-heavy. You don't have to worry about off-ball stuff because it's all about the dribble penetrator in that world. And that's we certainly struggled with that, I think, overall. Size-wise, we actually had size, so we were actually pretty good in that sort of space. Like any time we threw the ball inside, I felt like we had a good advantage there because we had genuine size compared to a lot of the Asian countries. But similar, we had to switch everything because we just couldn't stay in front. Like it was just the Korean teams in particular did a brilliant job of just attacking your hips, and they would force you to drop step and open up even when you don't want to open up, and that puts you in rotations that little bit quicker. The ability to apply pressure on the ball, like we had comfortably, I would say a dozen backcourt violations of like 8 second counts, purely because we were just so exhausted of trying to get the ball over half court that when they finally just relented a little bit of pressure, we were gassed and we almost couldn't get it over.
There were also times though where those backcourt violations were also on us because we were walking the thing up the floor because that's what we're used to doing because we have to run our special offense and instead of just go. Like, we'll figure it out once we get down there, but just go. So I think increasing that pace, particularly offensively, is important for us in juniors to help negate that because there's also, I think, a little bit of a you can maybe make a guess as to why this sort of stuff happens, but, you know, they catch the ball in the backcourt, there's a defender right there ready to go, and for some reason we think the answer is 5 crossovers instead of 1 and go, like just, you know, and owning that seam position rather than the sideline. That's what they did and a brilliant job of. Because they're all short leg, long body, they're able to just drive you with their hips and then use their length to be disruptive. So they would send you to the sideline. The second you went there, you were done. When we used our pressure release stuff when we owned or fought for the seam, or just didn't mess around with it. One action and go. We actually did a pretty good job.
Oh, good.
But as you said, that sort of tempo and that level of play is exhausting, especially when you're not used to it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, I think, part of it is, and it's funny because talking to the players about it, it's like, well, what have you taken away from this tournament? And one of the biggest things was that they just shoot it whenever they feel like it. Like, they just take really bad shots. It's like, well, clearly not. They shoot it at a pretty good percentage. Like, they're pretty good shots.
Yeah.
Like, maybe their technique is different to what we're seeing. Like, we saw a lot of, like, the two-handed three-point attempts and those sorts of things, but it goes in. So who's to sit there and say it's wrong? Like, maybe we're doing it wrong in that sort of world as well, because they can get that shot away. They can do what they need to do, and it's bloody hard to guard. Like, it's, you know, three is worth more than two, as we're continually told. So it makes sense as to why they would live on the three-point line quite regularly, I think, in that sort of space. But, yeah, guarding dribble penetration was a problem. Ball security, similar sort of problem. Like, the amount of times we'd come up with a defensive board, but we'd turn over the outlet pass. And it's like that straight away, that's not ball security. Like, we need to have the ball to be secure with it, not throwing it to the other team. But again, I look at it and it's like a whole bunch of 15 and 16-year-old kids for the most part. I think there might have been a couple of 17-year-olds. And even then, only a couple of months into being 17 years old, managed to stick with professional teams for the most part of it. And, you know, we did manage to get a friendly game in against the Vietnam national team at the end, who we beat fairly comfortably, be fair to say, without KG and Polly didn't play that game, which was nice because it meant we got more minutes into some of the other kids that hadn't played as much. But you could see the growth over the course of a week as to what that would look like for them as well, which was really cool. So phenomenal experience. Very grateful to have gone on it and those sorts of things. Would be remiss, of course, not so much for the Under-17 World Cup, to talk about JR, who was obviously around and taking pictures and video and, you know, the ultimate fanboy for everything that was going on. Like, the kids on those tours will have some great memories out of this because he captured a lot of it. So he did a phenomenal job with that on both the Shanghai trip and the – I don't think he was even supposed to go to the Shanghai trip. I think he just enjoyed his time in Korea and he's like, hey, I'm going to Shanghai. It's just over there anyway, so, you know, why not?
Yeah.
But, you know, he did a phenomenal job of that as to what it looked like. Similar deal. Kids off the court were fantastic. You know, just really nice kids that were enjoyable to be around, took everything really seriously. And it was eye-opening watching a film session at one stage where, like, I think when we do film with our kids, that it's like, can we get this over with? Like, it's they don't really want to be doing it. They're just like, hey, look, tell me what I need to know so I can get out of here and we can move on from here. And it was interesting watching KG, like, can you wind that back, please? So what are we supposed to be doing with this? How are we going to do that? What's our rotation look like on this? Can you play that again, please? And it was just, like, a couple of the kids are, like, turning over their shoulder, like, who is this lunatic, like, taking this so seriously? I was like, well, that's what you want to be playing at?
Yep.
There's a reason she's probably been the greatest ever WNBL player for mine.
Yep.
Like, it's her leadership skills are second to nobody I've ever seen before. Yep. And it's a lot of fun time on the bus, obviously. Like, the kids would come down and pick her brain on various things when they were going on, like, the day trips and those sorts of things. They'd just walk around and it's like, hey, what's college like? Like, talk me through this. How would you choose? And just being able to have that firsthand knowledge of someone that's still – like, she's still the person that's, like, boxing out so that you get the rebound, but you're talking to her about this. Like, it's – JR did a phenomenal job of making it look like she yelled at children, and she didn't. Like, she was genuinely celebrating.
I guarantee she was celebrating what they'd done. But in that moment in time, yeah, there was one or two that looked like she was yelling at them. One where she was pointing.
Yep.
And I remember it. She was like, yeah. But in the photo, it looked like – like she was having a crack.
But it was. And it was phenomenal for them to just sort of see what that level looks like. I don't think you get – that's such a unique experience, I think, for everyone involved. So massive thanks to obviously KG and Polly in that space as well. But it's been a busy month, it'd be fair to say. Like, you walk into the office and it's like, where is everyone? And it's like, oh, you know, Korea or China or Czech Republic and whatever it is. And it sort of seems a bit odd, but that's kind of where our game is going now. Like, it has to become more international. Like, how we play, I think, in Australia has to become more international and what that looks like. So it's cool to be able to give those kids that experience and hopefully set them up as a success when they go to the Oceania, the Asia and that sort of stuff as well.
Well, we need to get more kids overseas, like playing games overseas and getting that exposure and that experience. Yep. And whilst when they come back here, it's obviously different.
Yep.
Just having that under their belt is phenomenal. Like, you look at position discipline was a massive problem for us in Korea, massive. And to the point where at one stage we were talking about it, we'd taken an athlete off And I said, you've got to stay at home at that. Like, don't even stunt. Like, we took stunting away just to take away the itch to collapse. Yep. Don't even stunt. You've got to stay at home. And an answer of, oh, so I just let her get a layup. And I went, yes. Yeah, and just stood there looking at her, and then she was like, "Oh, sorry." I'm like, "That's okay." I said, "But yes, if we then are beaten by that, we can now coach the next part. Yeah. We can coach the slower rotation. But right now, your collapsing is stopping that person from getting better and stopping for that action from being coached. So stay at home." And we saw just massive growth on that across the week, in how much better they got at it, and how they, once they saw how it worked as well. And then, you know, communication was non-existent when we, sorry, communication on the court was non-existent, as you would have seen in a lot of JR's videos. Off the court, not a problem. On the court, silence. But there was almost like with KG and Polly there was like, it was almost like they gave them permission to be let, like it was sort of like, oh, they play in the WNBL, they've been to college, they've done all these things, and this is how they communicate. That means I can too. And it built, and it was, when we played that last game, that like we, it was just a practice game effectively. But the sound from the kids, especially with KG and Polly not on the floor, was because normally they led that sort of stuff, whereas they were leading it, and they were taking the initiative, was awesome. Like, and you know, you say like they were able to match it with pros, and not bad pros. Not like Division III. You know, these are the people that will be looked at for, you know, maybe future national teams and this sort of stuff. These teams could play.
Was it the WKBL? WKBL was the third highest paid women's league in the world.
Well, it was only now since the WNBA CBA came into effect. So it used to be the second.
It's an attractive
league. Tournament.
But even for our kids to want to go there. Yeah. Like, there should be our kids that want to get to that as well. Like, similar to, like, can we get some of the kids that just went to Shanghai to play over there? Like, that's the cool stuff. Because, I mean, whilst we've talked about these trips, there was also an AUSA tour that went that Nando coached on, got into a little bit of a heated argument with a scorer, I believe. Which
When you see Nando, ask him to tell you the story about the scorer. Just, that's all you have to say. He'll know what you're talking about. It is amazing. And he has to do the actions.
But, okay, this is a visual podcast now. Yeah. But, you know, there would have been another, you know, 12 to 20 kids on that tour as well, with kids that are obviously seeking scholarships to go to the States as well. For a lot of our kids, the answer is not necessarily in Australia for their senior pathway, especially when I say senior, like 18 to 24-ish. It might be overseas for a little bit before they come home, because they need a little bit more time to develop. Like, our junior pathways prepare our kids for a lot of stuff. Do they make a complete player? No. Like, the only way you can get that, though, is access to international basketball. And that's something I think we do it very well here in Victoria, and it's obviously a fantastic advantage of having so many kids that play the sport at a good level here as well. So,
but it's also a case of not every player is going to be an Opal or a Boomer.
No.
So let the basketball take you around the world.
Yep.
Go live somewhere for, you know, 4 months and play over there and see a whole new country, and then head somewhere else and have these experiences and things that where, you know, you look back and you go, okay, well, I didn't quite make my goal of being an Opal or a Boomer, but man, have a look at this that I got to do. All these, you know, thank you basketball.
Yep, yep.
Because I think what tends to happen is when you set yourself a goal and then you don't reach it, you resent the sport for it. And it's like, hang on, have a look at A, B, C, D, E, and F that you got because of this. Like, it's pretty cool. So opening yourself up to those experiences, I think, is important for all of our athletes, but particularly our younger ones going in for, like, transitioning from juniors into seniors.
Yeah. And it is part of it. Like, I'm tipping the humidity was similar in Shanghai as what we dealt with. There were a couple of days where a good 85 to 90% humidity, which was eventful as we're wandering around the place.
Yeah, it was very high.
Yeah, it's, that in itself is challenging.
Did the rain help? Like as in when you were out in it, did the rain help?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It cooled off the place a little bit, but we just had to jump over major flooding and puddles to get into our buses, which was also like an injury risk at the same time. So
very true.
Did they all have like slides on and or flip flops on and stuff rather than shoes?
No. Some people got the sneakers wet. Yeah. Some people just went barefoot.
As you do.
But I feel like
very clean city, Shanghai, though. Like you should be okay there.
In high rain, your slides are actually quite dangerous.
Oh, yeah. I would have thought that would have been worse, if anything. Yeah. But I mean, it's funny, though, because we obviously did a lot of walking around to go to dinner and those sorts of places. But you just have conversations with the kids as you're wandering around and sort of talking about it. And like I asked one of the kids, like, what's one of the things that you've really learnt out of this tournament? They're like, I thought I wanted to be a professional basketballer. They're like, now I know I want to be a professional basketballer. Like, but now I've actually seen what that looks like. Like, I live in a fairly confined bubble where I am. But now I'm certain of it. Like, I want this lifestyle. I want to be able to do this. Like, that's kind of cool because now they know very clearly what this potentially looks like, I think, for them moving forward. So thank you both for both of your insights. Of course, we're on to socials split talk for the end of this pod.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So I am grateful that I'm not at the age where I listen to talkback radio yet, but this did hit my social feed yesterday. It got sent to me by a couple of different coaches as well. This is a grandparent calling into a Perth radio station talking about volunteer coaches.
We've got a bunch of wonderful grandkids who play everything, and two of my sons have spent a long, long time coaching, and it strikes me so often. There seems to be very little appreciation from parents to the coaches, you know, and I see the amount of energy and time and commitment, huge commitment, that's required to be a good coach. There's almost a sense that the coaches, you know, are getting paid for this somehow or another, you know.
Do you think it mirrors, Pat, perhaps the behaviour of parents towards the coaches as it does towards the teachers in the classroom?
I do, indeed. Yes, indeed, I do. You know, I'm not saying that there's nobody that appreciates them. Of course there are. But it seems to be a very small, disproportionate number of people.
So, again, like this is something in isolation more than anything else. But, like, I mean, Deepa, you went straight from playing into coaching, I suppose. Like, what was that now, 15 to so years ago? I want to say off the top of my head.
Yeah, spot on.
There you go. Not quite the 40 of Rebel, but, you know, that's all right. It's but how have you seen, I suppose, the evolution of what coaching has looked like from when you first went into it to what it is now?
Yeah. It's I think the overall expectation of coaches has just gone through the roof. And I think the fact that, I don't know, 95% of coaches are volunteer coaches, it's difficult when you think about those coaches are dealing with their own work or full-time work, families. They're really coming into practices and games with limited prep time because that's not their job. And they're doing it because they enjoy it. And they're doing it because they want to be involved in the sport. But unfortunately, some of the expectations or entitlement from some parents on that team make those jobs really difficult for those coaches. I think we're getting better. Like the sport's getting better in Australia.
Yep.
The coaching's getting better. But unfortunately, that means there's more expectations on what the coaches need to know, what they need to learn. I was a DOC at Casey. And, you know, it's just what we do, but we have coaches' meetings throughout the year, maybe three or four, and then we'll have coaches' clinics on top of that. So I guess not only are they expected to be there on a Sunday at practice and a Friday night game, but then there's educational opportunities on top of that they need to give up time for. And, that volunteer space is just it's crazy in terms of what's expected from them and how much time they give. But maybe how underappreciated that role still is to this day.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think we're getting to the end of most of our seasons at the moment. It's when people start to get a little bit nostalgic about the whole thing. It's like, oh, you know, maybe that problem I had in February wasn't really that big a problem. And, you know, I really did like the coach and it was just one thing in isolation I disagreed with. Well, that's kind of life. Like you are going to disagree with people on various things and those sorts of stuff. And that's fine. Like you can disagree. But do remember that even if, and we'll just say the average VJBL coach, what a game will go for, we'll say an hour. like if they're a non-VC team, that's about an hour. It'll be roughly, I would suggest for most teams, a minimum of 45 minutes in one direction to play the next team. So you're at an hour and a half there, so there's 2.5 hours. Most clubs will have at least a 90-minute session. So you're at 4 hours now and maybe an hour session somewhere. So you're at 5 hours, not including travel time for training sessions. I'm going to assume that's going to be fairly minimal, all things considered. You know, we'll put an extra hour on for those there and back. So we're at about 6 hours. Plus we want them to put out all the fires. Plus we want them to educate all of our kids on how they should play. Plus we want them to deliver session plans. Plus we want them to do the additional coach education. Plus, we need it to be a child-safe environment. Mm-hmm. So there's a level of complexity that comes with that as to what that looks like. This is no longer a volunteer job for most people. Now, whether you have a child in the team or whether you don't have a child in the team, it's somewhat irrelevant because, yes, you're probably more likely to coach your child's team, I would suggest, in particular if it means they get a game and they have a coach there. But that also helps out probably 9 other families if you're doing that as opposed to just the one. If you don't have a child in it and you're doing it because you love coaching and all that sort of stuff, credit to you, of course. But you're doing a lot for someone you don't necessarily have that vested interest in that you're related to as well. And I look at the evolution of what this has looked like since I first started doing VJBL stuff, which was, you know, when I was 16-ish, I think it was off the top of my head. So that has drastically changed. Like if I didn't turn up with a session plan when I first started coaching, nobody would say a word. Like, and you could pull that whole, oh, you know, it's all in my head what I want to get done, and you'd be okay. Whereas now it's like, no, where's your session plan? What's the detail? Where are the points of emphasis? What are you going through? Where does this lay in, you know, the macro versus the micro sort of planning and all those sorts of things as well? It has evolved to a different beast where it is becoming a full-time job and, you know, not quite to that extent, of course, but, you know, you put a lot of time and thought and effort into this. You want it to be – there is no coach out there that wants to be a bad coach. Like every coach wants to be a good coach. But I hear some of the horror stories of what some coaches have to deal with and it's like that's completely unreasonable. Like you should not be put in this position where you're having to navigate these waters yourself because whether we are aware of it or not, a lot of our associations now are multi-million dollar businesses. Like and that's built on – junior participation in a lot of those cases as well. So if that first instance, and I mean, that's even talking just a representative, a VJBL player. Like if you go down another step to a domestic player, you know, it's still an hour of a game. It's still an hour of a training session. It's still a whole bunch of kids that may or may not know anything about the sport. There's still going to be landmines to navigate as they're trying to work out their own lives as kids. You know, what other family situations might be going on? Do they have school, study, you know, work, those types of things. Like all of this evolves. And that coaching role almost tends to be more pastoral care than it does, you know, trying to teach kids to be good basketballers. And we just spent like a good hour talking about where we can potentially take the basketball side of things, but now we're getting into what it looks like for a coach. And I mean, Zoe, you're probably no different. You finished playing and went straight into coaching. Like, and whilst that wasn't as long ago, like it's, you've still seen the evolution of this exist.
Oh, it's a while ago. but yeah, it was... I think what needs to be remembered, all that stuff you're saying about doing as a coach, doing that extra educational stuff and all those sort of things, when you're enjoying what you're doing, that stuff is fun.
Absolutely.
You actually want to do that stuff. So it's when all these other things start to drag you down, you know, if I could say anything to parents out there, don't be that parent that a coach will see walk in the door and go, ugh. Like, and, well, and everyone's seen one. And
well, they have, but they've also, a lot of parents think, well, I'm not that parent.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe you are. Like, it's you got to be careful of that too, because what you don't perceive to be a problem, someone else might.
Yeah, but we talk about too, like, that they're volunteers and stuff. Our sport and sport in general in this country is built on volunteers, which is we are so lucky to have so many volunteers. Here's the thing. If it continues in the trend that it's heading at the moment and it gets to a point where we're going to have to start and pay coaches like genuine wage for what they're doing, your fees go up. Like it's not going to be something that's going to be absorbed by, you know, the club or anything because it can't be. So your fees now go up and it's more expensive for your child to now play. So look, I'm not saying that all coaches are great and all coaches are doing the right thing and treating kids the right way. I'm not saying that. There's, you know, sport is a reflection of our community, which means there are people in the community that we walk around and see and go, oh, that guy's an idiot or that woman's an idiot. They exist, right, in our sport. But the amount of times I see the good ones, because they're the good ones, because they work hard, and as DP said, you know, that it becomes this level of expectation increases. It's almost, you know, yesterday's favour is tomorrow's expectation, and it gets higher and higher and higher. Everyone has a breaking point. And so what happens if we don't have coaches? Team doesn't get put in. Yep. Like, so it's, you know, there's a few ways about this, and it doesn't mean you can't have a say on if you don't agree with something that's happening with your, it's your child, of course. The approach, I think, is something that needs to be adjusted, because some of the things that are being said to our coaches is just, frankly, horrific.
Yeah, and it's a combination of just being burnt out. Because you do tend to coach 12 months of the year and you want to make yourself available. And if there's a child in your team that's not improving at the rate that you want and you sort of say, hey, look, I can do an extra session with you here and there to try and catch you up to speed, well, that's more time. Like, that's, it comes from a great place and it's fantastic you want to do it, but again, that's more time. Then you put yourself almost in a little bit of pressure where it's like, well, okay, I'm doing extra work with you. I want to see the payoff of this as well. And then you put yourself in that difficult position where it's like, you know, I don't want to favor a kid I'm doing an individual with, like, I've got to keep that neutral as well. It's just a level of complexity. It's not as simple as turn up and coach anymore. And that's the difficult part, I think, for a lot of coaches, is they would love to turn up and coach, but that's not what our sport is anymore. And there's a reason for that, and part of me likes that it's not what it is anymore. Like, we want coaches that are able to plan and put together like a really great environment for our kids, but you can't do that, you know, just off a flick of the wrist on a piece of paper. Like, that's the difficult part.
Yeah, but you look at it too, like, our sport overall is relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how it should be. That's just, everyone should have access to be able to play basketball. And that's one of the great things, I think, about our sport overall, is that it is front of mind to keep it accessible. You know, the tagline, everybody's game, like, that is... that is what, you know, that is. But if we keep driving it to a place where we're going to have to, you know, really invest, the game's going to become quite expensive. And opportunities, because that means less coaches have the credentials to be able to coach at a certain level. And so that means less teams. So that means less opportunities. So it's, yeah, I think it's... you know, as long as our kids are safe, you know, and I look at it too from a club perspective. I said it a million times on this pod before. Probably about 80% of issues that parents have could be solved if we didn't pick 10 kids per team.
No, it is one of those things where, you know, how many times do we keep having to go to the well with coaches who are just fatigued and burnt out? And I get it. Like, in all honesty, like, there are a few things I would enjoy less at the moment than committing to a full 12-month season. Like, the ability to pick and choose and jump in where I need to, perfect for me at the moment. So to those that do it, credit to you. Like, I do want you to know it is appreciated by plenty of people in that sort of space, because without the volunteers, the sport does come to a grinding halt.
And so, we're here to help too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, this isn't just whilst we're – when you look at particularly like DP and myself – when we're in the high performance space, we're still for coaches. Like, we were coaches too. We've done gone through all the things you've gone through. If a quick chat to one of us or the coach ed department in particular can help, you know, just at least make you not feel as alone, because you're not, then and keep you in the sport, then it's absolutely worth it.
We've, I think, like, it's important for everyone to know, at least for me anyway, we've been through like the highs and lows of it as well. Like, yep. We've had really great parents and really appreciative parents, and then we've had the opposite of it throughout our time. So, yeah, the more any coaches want to speak to us, the more we can probably provide that support and advice, because it's not that long ago that we were in your shoes coaching VJBL.
No, yeah. It's exactly right, and it does evolve so quickly. And yep. You know, yes, we get to do the fun stuff with the better kids and all those sorts of things, but they start somewhere. And that's the reality of it. It was, we need people at that grassroots level being able to get the kids engaged in the sport, keep them safe, keep it fun, keep them happy, and move them through to be able to get to wherever they get to. And it sounds really flippant, and I somewhat groan and roll my eyes every time a coach does a coaching clinic. They're like, oh, you know, firstly, I'd just like to say, without you, our sport comes to a grinding halt, and, you know, we need people. But it's true. Like, it is, it's a bit of a throwaway comment, but it is true. If we don't have coaches at that grassroots level keeping our kids engaged and safe in the sport, we don't have anything at the high performance level. So it is an important area that we can't take for granted. So as much as we sort of say flippantly, oh, you know, send through your coach shout outs, genuinely think about the coaches that have helped your kids in that capacity there, if you are a parent. And, you know, it's amazing how often a text message or an email of a positive nature goes a long way. And, you know, we get so many emails with, you probably never get to hear the good stuff, so I just wanted to send you an email. And it's like, the fact that you have to qualify that probably shows that we don't get a lot of the good stuff at times, even though we know it's there. So just be mindful of that, please, with the volunteer coaches in particular. Not even volunteer coaches, even the ones that are potentially paid for it. Just be mindful of that, because they are a vital cog in the wheel of what makes this sport move forward, and the community sport in particular. So thank you both for jumping in. This is a long one today, so I appreciate you both there. And coaches, we'll catch you again next week on the pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.